Bills are favored by 5.5 points. Gambling institutions think we're going to win by 5.5 points. The over-under is 48.5 points. They think if you add the two teams score together at the end, it'll total 48.5 points, which is crazy for two reasons. First, nobody can score half a point. Final score is not going to add up to 48.5. But second, I think the Bills are going to score 48.5 points themselves. I'm just not sure if that's going to be enough. But if I was, and if I was willing to bet $100 on it, and if the Bills won by more than 5.5 points, they would give me $340 after the game. You can bet $100 that Diggs will score our first touchdown, and if you bet that, you'd win $700. You can bet $100 that Stanley Morgan is going to score our first touchdown, and if he does, you would win $11,000. Stanley Morgan. To be honest, I didn't know he was a player. I thought he was a financial brokerage. You can bet that we will score first and lose the game, plus 550. You can bet that we will not score in both halves, plus 1,000. You can bet that we will not score at all, plus 2,000. But why would you? Well, I mean, I know why one of us might. But Frump's been cheering for Cincinnati since back when he was just Eric. So we will choose to overlook that flaw in his character. I do not bet on football games. I used to, back in junior high when I first discovered betting. Our classroom's bookie was my friend Dave, and one Tuesday I saw him handing out money to people. And when I asked him what he was doing, he told me he was paying off bets, that some guys had picked winning football games, and he was paying them. And as a seventh grader, I liked money and I liked football, so I asked if I could get in. And Dave, being my friend, said sure. And he handed me the next week's schedule, and he said, pick four winners. So I looked it over, and I circled four teams that I knew they were going to win, and he said, okay, that'll be a dollar. And I said, for what? And he said, you don't know how to do betting, do you? And I said, no. He said, well, each game costs a quarter, but if you win all four, I'll give you $2 back. I thought, I give you a dollar, and you give me $2 back? I said, great. And the first week, my teams won. And on the next Tuesday, Dave handed me, because he's my friend, $2. I thought, wow, this is fun and easy and profitable and easy. My ill-gotten gains that week bought me Nutty Buddy ice creams every day at lunch. I asked for the next weekend's card. I picked my four teams, but this time I noticed some teams had pluses next to them. I said, Dave, what's a plus? He said, oh, those are points. You add those on to that team's score at the end. I said, what? If I pick those teams, they get extra points? Dave said, they're called underdogs. I said, oh, man, this just got easier. I picked my four teams. I handed him my four quarters. I won again. And that week, I not only bought Nutty Buddies, I bought bags of Fritos every day. I started thinking my junior high years were going to be pretty much way better than I imagined. But the next week, I lost all four games. And Dave said, it happens. And as a friend of mine, he handed me next week's card, which I lost all four games again. And now I was out of money because I was in seventh grade. So when Dave handed me my next card, I said, I can't, I don't have any money. And he said, because he was my friend, Dave said, that's okay, I know you're good for it. I said, I can bet without giving you four quarters? He said, sure, we'll just keep track. Weeks later, I was deep in debt. Like, I owed $3.75. And I knew I was in trouble because I didn't have $3.75. I wasn't even sure my parents had $3.75. So I told Dave, I quit. And because he was my friend, he said, okay, but you still owe me $3.75. And I said, I know, I will pay you eventually. And I did pay him eventually. But that was the last time I ever bet on a sporting event. I have good friends who bet regularly and vigorously and eagerly, and they enjoy it. But mostly, in my opinion, one of the best decisions I ever made was to not. And yet here I am today, unashamedly asking you to make the biggest bet of your life. Not just a quarter a game, not just a $100 prop bet, but to bet all of your money. All of your money and all of your property and all of your allegiance and all of your happiness. In fact, to stake your entire future from here on out on one unlikely bet, which I know is not an easy ask. But as we work together on living life in Jesus' kingdom, this is at the heart of it. So let me start with a famous story that you probably know. There are some classic stories that we all know, right? Like, let me tell you a story about a man named Jed, poor mountaineer, barely kept his family fed. But then one day he was shooting at some food, and up from the ground came a bubbling crude oil, that is, black gold Texas tea. Do you know that one? How about this one? The mate was a mighty sailing man, the skipper brave and true. Five passengers set sail that day for a three-hour tour. The weather started getting rough. The tiny ship was tossed. If not for the courage of the fearless crew, wow, you know, the minnow would be lost. And I wish I had a catchy theme song for this next one, but I'm just going to read it to you. It's pretty similar. Now, Naaman was the commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. You know this one, right? This famous song, this famous army guy, big fighter, General George Washington, General George Patton, George Foreman, General Naaman. He was beloved. He was Naaman. People made up stories about him. Legends were created about him. Like they said, if you want a list of Naaman's enemies, just find an extinct species list somewhere. They said the dinosaurs looked at Naaman the wrong way once, and you know what happened to them. They said Naaman once kicked a horse in the chin, and its descendants are now called giraffes. They said things like, Naaman once won a game of Connect Four in three moves. I mean, he was famous. They said, if you spell Naaman in Scrabble, you win. Forever. This is the one I like the most, I think. Once a cobra bit Naaman's leg, and after 5 days of excruciating pain, the cobra died. But he had contracted leprosy, this hero of theirs, from which there was no coming back, for which you would eventually become an outcast confined to a leper colony, because leprosy deadens your nerves, it degrades your skin, it leads to infections, which leads to death, plus it's wildly contagious. Naaman, great as he was, and he was at the top, Naaman was destined for a miserable ending. So when the word got out, they probably had a national day of mourning. Leprosy? No, not Naaman. Leprosy? Oh. And an immigrant girl who had been tasked with cleaning house for Naaman's wife heard about that. And this girl liked Naaman and his wife. So this immigrant girl said, it's too bad we're not where I grew up from, because there's a preacher there who could heal him. And the wife told Naaman about that preacher, and Naaman told the king about that preacher, and the king, who loves Naaman and needs Naaman, the king said, by all means, go. I will send a letter to the king of Israel. So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read, with this letter, I am sending my servant Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy. Now, when he arrived, after some confusion, kind of funny story, when Naaman got to town, he went to the king of Israel, figuring that if anybody in the country could heal disease like that, probably the king would keep that guy close by. That makes sense. Naaman's willing to pay. He's brought tons of cash with him, literally tons. But it turns out the king and the preacher don't get along, because the king wasn't really into religion. And the king, when he read this letter, thought Naaman was trying to bait him into a war by demanding an impossible healing from him. You know, the old heal my incurable disease or we'll blow your country to smithereens ploy. See that one in every other Mission Impossible movie. But verse 8 says, when Elisha, the man of God, the preacher, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent this message. Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel. So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. The preacher Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored and you will be cleansed. So it all works out in the end. Naaman connects with this preacher. The preacher heals him. Naaman goes home with skin like a baby, like he's using oil of olay or something. And that's all true. But if you know the story, you know there's a little glitch in the way that they got to the happy ending. Because when Naaman got to the preacher's office, ready to be cured, Elisha didn't even come out. He sent out his secretary. He sent out a youth minister who said, if you head on down to Canandaigua Lake and jump in 7 times, you'll be good. Good day. And he turned around and went back inside. Now, I don't know if you caught this before, but Naaman is the original Chuck Norris. Only he not only has the unbelievable reputation, he has an ego to match. He is Naaman, and people back home worship him and fear him and salute him when he walks by. But here, he's not talking to the king of Israel, just some random preacher. And he's not even talking with the preacher, just the youth minister who comes out and invites him to a pool party. What's up with that? Verse 11, Naaman went away angry and said, I thought surely he would come out to me, stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? So Naaman turned and went off in a rage. Naaman says, fooey on all that, and he turns his tank around and he heads for home. And he still has his pride, and he still has his money, and he still has his leprosy. Verse 13, Naaman's servants went to him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, wouldn't you have done it? How much more then when he tells you, wash and be cleansed? Naaman had expected a great show, and his guy said, well, right, we didn't get that, but how about since we're here, let's just try what he said. We know it's not spectacular like you are, oh great Naaman, but maybe it could still work. After all, we've come all this way because you believed it could work. And to his credit, Naaman turned the car around, went back, and did what was asked. Verse 14, so he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan River 7 times, as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. It worked. He did as he was instructed, crazy though it sounded, and it worked. It's kind of cool what happens next. Stuff that happens after miracles always, I think, is interesting. In verse 15, it says, then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, now I know that there's no God in all the world except in Israel. So please accept this gift from your servant. The prophet answered, as surely as the Lord lives, whom I serve, I will not accept a thing. And even though Naaman urged him, he refused. And Naaman said, if you won't, please let me, your servant, be given as much earth as 2 mules can carry, for your servant will never again make burnt offerings or sacrifices to any other god but the Lord. And then he left. Naaman had clean skin and a bunch of dirt in his trunk, and the preacher had his thanks. Now, there's another story about what happened on Naaman's way home, because at the airport, before they all took off to go back to Aram, the youth minister, remember the youth minister? He came running down the hallway in the airport, jumping barriers, dodging security like that little kid in Love Actually. He's yelling, wait, 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 hold the plane, wait, the preacher changed his mind, wait, wait, wait. And the youth minister stops in front of Naaman, hands on his knees, panting. And the youth minister says, he wants the money. He thought about it. He changed his mind. Yes, he'll take what you offered. Thank you. He wants the money. And Naaman said, great, he deserves it. And they gave the youth minister all the silver and all the gold and all the Gucci that he could carry. And Naaman and his entourage smiled and boarded the plane and took off. The problem was the preacher had not changed his mind. The youth minister just thought that's bad planning to be offered a couple million and not pocket it. So he did. But then when the preacher found out what the youth minister had done, you can read all that in 2 Kings 5 before the game today. How about that? It's a good story. You should read it. But for now, let's talk about 3 big ideas from this account that can help us live life even better. Number one, the way you know you really believe something is if you act as if it were true. The way you know you really believe something is if you act as if it were true. I know I said that same thing last week, but some of you weren't here. And some of you were, and you weren't listening. And I'm probably going to say this a lot for a while because I really believe that this idea can help us live life better. And if I believe that, I'm going to act like it's true. And that's why I'm going to say this a lot. You really believe something when you act as if it were true. Charles Blondin was a tightrope walker in the late 1800s, and he was very good at what he did. He was an amazing tightrope walker. He walked across the Niagara Falls Gorge near where the Rainbow Bridge is several times. Once he did it blindfolded. Once he went out and sat on a chair. On one leg, he sat on a chair. Once he pushed a wheelbarrow over and back. Once he cooked and ate an omelet while he was sitting out there. And one time, after he'd gone over and back, after people had watched him do all these things, he asked who believed that he could safely traverse the tightrope. And they all raised their hand. And obviously, he had just done it. They knew that he could do that. Then Blondin said, who here thinks that I could carry somebody across this tightrope on my back? And lots of people raised their hand. And Blondin said, great, who wants a ride? No hands. But his manager, Harry Colkard, raised his, and Blondin carried his manager on his back across the tightrope. Now, did those spectators that day believe that Blondin was capable of carrying a man on his back? Not really. Here's the test. You don't really believe something until you act as if it were true. Did Naaman think that the servant girl was right and that the preacher could heal his terminal disease? At first, yes, or else he would not have packed up his horses and headed to Israel. But then no, because when he was told to go down into the Jordan River, he didn't do it. That didn't make sense to him, so he didn't do it. He didn't believe what he had been told. Fortunately for him, the guys with him did think that it would work, and they challenged Naaman's choice. They said, Naaman, you're not making the right choice, which was a risky thing to do. I mean, Naaman is Naaman. Naaman is the reason Waldo's hiding. Naaman doesn't breathe. He holds air hostage. Outer space exists because it's afraid to be on the same planet with Naaman. When Naaman does push-ups, he pushes the ground down. I mean, you mostly don't want to make this guy mad. And when he's leaving, they say, wait, 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 don't leave, don't leave. No, that's not right. Wait, come on, jump in, please. Go in the river, please. And the reason they risked that confrontation was they believed the preacher. I know they believed the preacher because they acted like what he said was true. And here's the question. Do you believe the preacher? No, not me. The preacher. The preacher says a lot of things about how we can live life best. And many of them seem kind of backwards. Like the preacher says, haven't you read that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female? And said, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they're no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. Do you believe him? Well, not if you don't act like that's true. If you choose to separate what God's joined together, you don't really believe the preacher. Because if you did, you would realize that a man and woman joined together is for life. Yeah, you can say, I believe, and you can even believe that you believe. I know people who make that claim. But if you don't act like what he says is true, you don't really believe. Let's try another one. The preacher says pretty clearly, therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your gift. Huh. We have a beautifully crafted box in our lobby for people who want to give an offering on Sundays. We are grateful that so many of you do on such a regular basis. That's terrific. But, the preacher says, if before you drop some money in, you remember that somebody's ticked off at you, you should really go fix that. To the best of your ability, you should go make that right. You should apologize if you did wrong. You should listen without defensiveness if you don't think you did anything wrong. You should figure it out. You should make it right. The preacher says your life will not be right no matter how many or how much your offerings, if you don't at first try to reconcile with the people who have issues with you. Do you believe the preacher? Have you ever made a gift of an offering when you knew people were furious with you? You believe the preacher if you act as if what he says is true. He said, the greatest among you will be your servant. Those who exalt themselves will be humbled. Those who humble themselves will be exalted. Do you believe him? I don't know. How are you doing at serving other people? He said, for if you forgive other people when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins. He said, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved. But whoever doesn't believe will be condemned. He said, Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow worries about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Do you believe the preacher? Did you act this week like all that was true? Like when the preacher says, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yeah, good question. Do you believe this? When you are looking death in the face, when somebody you love dies, do you believe the preacher? Not do you say you believe, not do you think you believe, do you act as if what he says is true? When you deal with death, is there an unusual confidence in you because you believe him? For us to live life the best isn't really about what we say, although words can matter. It's way more about what we do, because actions are based on what we think is true. We base our actions on what we really think on the inside. Like following the Vietnam War, a call was made from a phone booth in California to an affluent Massachusetts home. The phone rang in the Boston home, and the mother picked up the receiver and then started squealing with delight because she heard the voice of her son. They assumed he had been killed when they had not heard from him for a very long time. When the initial excitement died down, the boy said, Mother, I have a favor to ask of you. Can I bring a friend home with me? She said, Of course, of course, of course. Any friend of yours is a friend of ours. He said, Mom, you don't understand. I might have to bring this friend home, and it might be permanent. She said, Son, we have a big house. You know that. We have a big home. That's not a problem. Mom, you don't understand. My friend doesn't have a right arm, and he doesn't have a right leg, and his face is really messed up. And there was a long, uncomfortable silence and some hesitancy in the mother's voice when she said, Well, I'll have to talk to your father. That could be a hardship. I just don't know if all of that would fit in with our clique. The phone went dead in Boston. Next morning, there was another call from California to Boston. This time it was the police. Sorry, ma'am, we regret to inform you that your son has committed suicide. I guess he didn't want to live with one leg and one arm and a horribly scarred face. Click. The phone went dead in California. What we do or what we won't do reveals what we believe more than anything we say. Lots of people say they believe the preacher, but those who hear his words and do what he says are the people who end up living life well. First thing we learn from Naaman is the way you know you really believe something is you act as if it were true. The second thing we learn from 2 Kings chapter 5 and the story of Naaman is that youth ministers need to be watched carefully. I have a great story about that, but I have no time for that today, so I'll put it in the email this week. Third, the last thing we all mentioned today, the last thing that we learned from this story is that there is no such thing as a sure bet, except if you're looking back. Like, anyone want to bet me on the Giants-Eagles playoff game this week? Yeah, I don't bet, it's true. I haven't bet since Mrs. Williams' homeroom class in Clarence Junior High, but I will happily bet you this one if you want to. I will bet you as much as you want to bet. I'll take the Eagles. You take the Giants. I'll give you up to 30 points. I'll give you 30. You can add 30 to whatever the Giants end up with, and I'll bet you whatever amount of money you'd like to bet. You know why? Because that game's over, and I know the score. and Philadelphia won by 31 points. So even if I give you 30 points, it's still a sure winner for me. It's a sure bet. I know. There is no such thing as a sure bet. I know the line. How do you make a small fortune in gambling? Start with a large fortune. I understand. But what I'm talking about right now is not a bet, it's an investment. Here's the big bet that's on the board today. Bet on what Jesus says to do every time, and your payoff is plus eternal life. If you bet that what he says will work, you will win the best life that you can possibly ever have. And it's a bet, but it's kind of more of an investment because it's a bet made looking back. Can Jesus live life well? Well, the life he lived, that he says he can teach you how to live, was better than anybody's life who ever lived. He says, if you live life like this, you will live even after you die. And he did. He lived again after he died. And the people who watched all that and who bet on him early, they lived the most amazing lives of any people in the history of the world. And people who are betting on him today are living life way differently from people who don't bet on him. Now, it's still a bet. I admit it's a bet. Like Blondin's manager, you still have to climb on the guy's back. But there is lots and lots and lots of evidence that this is the bet that always pays out. It's a good bet. Did you hear about the two guys in the theater? They're watching this movie, and it's very nerve-wracking at the end. It's very tense. The hero's in a he won't get out of this one. There's no way. The plane's going down. He has no wings. It's into the ocean. They're shooting at him. It's bad. One guy leans over to his friend. He says, I bet you $10 he gets out of this unscathed. And the other guy, he said, no way. He's in big trouble. I'll take that bet. Somehow the hero manages to land the plane flawlessly, finds a bow, gets away whistling, unscathed. The second guy pulls out a 10. He says, fair's fair. You were right. You win the bet. And the first guy laughs. He goes, nah, I can't take your money. He said, I've already seen this movie. Second guy said, well, so have I. I just didn't think he could do it again. Sure bet? You got to bet. And I bet that there's something in your life, and you know what Jesus says you should do about it, but you haven't yet because you just can't because it's so crazy. How about give it a shot? Act like it's really true what Jesus says. And if you do, like Naaman, you might just end up getting home clean. Let's pray.